Touch 3. Location: the Strait of Gibraltar. Point of contact: a jewel ensnared in a solitary coral on the seabed, deep in the water. The blue underworld is a profusion of colors. Aside from the ubiquitous and sundry hues of blue it keeps from the sunlight that falls on it, there's a rainbow in there. A rainbow in the sea. Far from recurrent than it is in its significant other, the sky. Marine life and topography is staggeringly diverse. And while its colors demonstrate this diversity, they often preserve enchanting keys to all that is inscrutable to land dwellers. Deep down, in this passage that connects the Mediterranean to the Atlantic, sea to ocean, a remnant of possibly the most mooted chapter in ancient history is cradled in coral. It is no exaggeration to claim I'd got my hands on the holy grail of modern archaeology. This was an amethyst stone, shaped like a water droplet, fitted snugly into the lotus-shaped head of an antique silver ring, camouflaged by the solitary coral it had settled into. But that wasn't all there was to it. When I yanked one wonder out of the other, a slave bracelet linked to one of its lotus petals came up too. There were three parts to this marvel, and a history, dark, bottomless, and compelling. The deep purple droplet sat on a budding silver flower, chained to another pendant roosted upon a more blossomed flower, chained to yet another transparent teardrop, perched on a flower in full bloom, burgeoning into a broad bracelet. For some reason, these flowers looked like flames, and every mold underneath was a labyrinth. I saw abundance, victory, power, privilege, prestige, and pride. And then, as it always does, came the fall. I saw friction, faction, treason, disintegration, havoc, rack and ruin, compelling collapse, a sinister disappearance, the dethroning and drowning of a utopia. Atlantis. This jewel belonged to an Atlantean queen. I found myself searching. Could there ever have been a never-never land? Could there ever have been an Atlantis? Only Plato knew. He was the sole inheritor of this information, the gold standard. Not one other ancient source before, during, and after his lifetime could tell. He did, in a book called Critias. And this was it. Why should we believe him? He's basically the foundation of Western philosophy and the way we largely live our lives today. Plato was an incredible man. He realized that the earth was round. He realized the planets revolved around the sun. And if he tells us an island by the name of Atlantis existed, I think we can take him as a credible source. But Plato ended Critias abruptly and unexpectedly, leaving much unexplained. He wrote so much, although never enough to lead us to the lost queendom. Did Plato run out of words and ideas and an imagination if this was all a fish story? Or did he want us to fish it out for ourselves? Sunken land and fiction or fact? Man has scarred the earth in search for Atlantis. Yet we have no exact location for this lost continent. The ring tells a story of its own and shows me a world so far unknown. There is a submerged city, somewhere at the bottom of the blue. Before it sank, it was the land of milk and honey. Now, milk and honey are both dense and sweet. What's dense weighs you down. What's sweet eventually rots. Nevertheless, they're irresistible. A taste that lingers, even if you were done for. What I held ornamented the finger of a woman who ruled paradise on our planet. It was a vast power that sprang forth from the Atlantic Ocean. It stood firm until it swallowed itself with malice and greed and corruption. For all the while it was around, though, and before it wasted itself away, it stood as the paragon of politics and prosperity and people. This is how civil society was formed, how men lived together and then fell apart when things went wrong. Succession isn't optional. The crown gets passed on, and very often you don't know what to do with it. You may have been born into royalty, but royalty, nobility, leadership, it's a mindset, and momentous responsibility. The crown doesn't keep itself on. You bow your chin despairingly low, or raise your chin up conceitedly high. Either way, it slips. You look straight, even, level-headed, prudent, dependable, all there. The crown stays put. It's what this queen had and lost. Set on shore, it became Atlantis's fate. She ruled the ideal realm, the most honorable and heroic race in human history existed in her land. A land that was outstandingly well-governed and unrivaled at warfare too. The worthiest achievements and the finest political institutions we've ever heard of on Earth are attributed to it. But why has the world been after it? Well, the Atlanteans were the perfect race, yes. A master race of superhuman capability came originally from here. To the dynasties of the past, it was therefore essential to discover its whereabouts and bring it in line with the rise of their own empire. It was believed that Atlantis was part of some advanced civilization, and there may be a technology to be gained from discovering it today. And now, because she left no written archives, like Plato is ours, the ring is her record, and it might just be the doorway to that technology. A goddess marshaled the queen into arranging her kingdom right, almost blurring the line between the two figures. The former apparently chose the region because she realized a temperate climate would produce people of outstanding intelligence. A lover of war and wisdom, she chose a place as she did to produce people that would most closely resemble herself, a formidable force to reckon with. The city was founded and people began to live there by a particular code. The offspring of the gods perpetuated a stable culture and made for all-round excellence in perfect balance and synchronicity. Now, this queen of Atlantis had a great and wonderful empire which ruled over many others. To conquer is every monarch's agenda. It was hers too, and she wanted it all. On either side of the strait, on either side of the Pillars of Hercules, her people did too. They were a dynasty willing to dominate. But the history of empires is that they crash. And while they had it all is never enough. Within powerful civilizations, greed reinforces that. Whether or not Atlantis is one of the greatest mysteries ever told, it is the tale of a dynasty destroyed first by a devil named Desire and then by Zeus, the god of the gods, sometimes prompting the realization that power is fleeting, empires come and go, and only the grave awaits us all. This vast power gathered its forces to subdue at a blow its neighbors. Zeus, the god of gods, perceiving that an honorable race was in a woeful plight, inflicted a punishment upon them. Violent earthquakes and floods occurred. In the course of a single terrible day and night, Atlantis disappeared into the depths of the sea. Legend has it that the gods divvied up the entire world among themselves. Everyone had a slice of the pie, large or small. As self-important as it sounds, they etch their own shrines in stone, compose their own rituals. God of the seas, Poseidon, gained the island of Atlantis as his territory. And then he fell in love. Poseidon came upon her on a hill halfway along the extent of a plain, situated halfway along the coastline of this island. Her parents passed away soon after Poseidon had come to desire her. This ring, crowning into a bracelet, was his very first gift to Cleito, an original earthborn mortal woman of the land, and with it, he lay the island at her feet. She ruled it, that queen of the heart of the sea. But not before. Poseidon gave the hill where she lived secure defenses by breaking it off from the surrounding island and creating increasingly large concentric circles, alternately, of land and water around it. Two of the rings were comprised of land, three of water. He made them equidistant from the center. The middle of the island was, for him, the pivot of the city he was constructing. As it is today, the island was inaccessible back then. Ships and sailboats hadn't come to be as yet. That was about to change. The central island was easily organized with two underground springs, one warm, the other flowing cold from its source. With the irrigation in place, all kinds of food grew in sufficient quantities from the soil. Cleito bore him five sets of twin sons. Together, they reared and raised them to become formidable rulers of their land. 10 portions of the island for 10 kings to rule, with the eldest, Atlas, as supreme emperor, after whom the Atlantic Ocean, and therefore Atlantis, is named. When they did, they were to wield authority and reign by the rules laid down by their creators, inscribed on a stele of orichalc, preserved in their shrine. The dynasty survived for many generations, and it grew enormously rich and self-sufficient. The land had more than any royal line has or ever would, solid or fusible. They mined primarily for orichalc, present-day gold, and several other minerals and metals. Nature, it seems, had decided to give almost all of its bounty to the island. Highlands, plains, mountains, valleys, cliffs along the coastline, shelter from the mighty north winds. And there lay in the lay of the land many wealthy villages with their rural populations. Rivers, lakes, springs, grasslands, marshes, streams, meadows, and woodlands that kept every species of tame and wild character adequately supplied with food. The woodlands produced plenty of every kind of timber that builders needed for labor, for any and every task and occasion, really. Elephants, the largest and most voracious in the world, had ample to graze. Atlantis was home to herds and herds of them. The sacred, sun-drenched island yielded, in large quantities, everything aromatic the earth produces today in the way of roots or shoots or shrubs or gums exuded by flowers or fruits. Water was plentiful. Zeus sent them rain. When he didn't, they diverted water from the canals to all their crops. Crops of a remarkably high quality were cultivated. The trees grew to be beautiful and extraordinarily tall, owing to the fertility of the soil. Agricultural produce aside, they set about building sophisticated shrines, royal mansions, harbors and shipyards, warships and grand bridges with towers and gates across the rings of water surrounding the queen city, to create a road to and from the palace, a monument of astonishing size and beauty inside the Acropolis at the center of the concentric circle. At its core was a shrine dedicated to Cleito and Poseidon in a temple dedicated to the goddess and god at a spot that marked their union, where they had originally conceived and fathered the 10 kings of the future. The central island, the loops of land and the bridges were all ringed with a stone wall, smeared with orichalc, which made Atlantis gleam like fire and brought to it, true to Queen Cleto's name, bright fame. They were a complex society, these Atlanteans, living a utopian existence nonetheless, its people in harmony with nature and its fellow men. The ones that volunteered for the forces tended to their chariots and horses and other military and naval devices with utmost care and purpose. The monarchy, military, and civilians alike prioritized the defense of their heaven, all system savvy, recognizing precisely what was expected of them. Atlantis was centuries ahead of anything seen on any mainland. The architecture, whether temples or other constructions, was arresting, glistening when sun or moon shined on it. Plenty of lush green, attractive gardens and gymnasia, and designated exercise grounds for people and horses. Hippodromes for equestrian contests found their place on Atlantis. The shipyards were filled with warships and with all the equipment they required, and everything was kept in a state of readiness for whenever the queen wished to strike or protect. Aside from the artistry of the queen's residence, the dwellings of the general public had their own charm. By harbors teeming with merchant ships and traders arriving from far and wide, swept off their feet by the island, too beguiled to not return for more business. All day and all night, the place bustled with bouncy people and general uproar and noise and shouting. Of the productive kind, of course. Atlantis was the queendom of a goddess, indeed. For many generations, for as long as Poseidon's nature remained securely inside them, the Atlanteans obeyed the laws and were on good terms with the gods, their creators and kin. They were principled, high-minded, and true people that reacted to the vicissitudes of life and one another with self-possession and practical intelligence, and easily bore the burden, so to speak, of the mass of their gold and other possessions. They weren't drunk on the luxury their wealth afforded them. They remained in control of themselves and never stumbled. As sober men do, they saw clearly that even prosperity is enhanced by the combination of mutual friendship and virtue, that wealth declines and friendship is destroyed by materialistic goals and ambitions. So what went wrong then? Too much wine, maybe? Sobriety sunk and sailed away. In all seriousness and sobriety, though, why did the ring slip off? Why did the bracelet become slave to an unconscionable existence? With the divine nature within them, they thrived in every way. Ultimately, however, they were human, and human beings, no matter how divine, are flawed. The gods are too, as a matter of fact. We all feel and then do. And what we do, directed predominantly by passion, isn't necessarily always right. Everything that humans would need was available in Atlantis itself. But need and greed are almost diametrically opposite facets. More is not enough. Even more has no boundaries. When as a people, you look down on everything except virtue, when you've got everything and more, you're holier than thou. Smug selves could well count prosperity, abundance, exorbitance even as trivial. They took it all for granted and bred a culture of entitlement. That then, quite simply, is what happened. The Atlanteans became incapable of bearing their prosperity and grew corrupt. The vileness of their behavior destroyed the best of their valuable possessions, mental and material. They were infected with immoral greed and power, and they had no qualms about making enemies out of each other to get even more. The tragedy? They thought they had finally attained the most desirable and enviable life possible. The foxiest fools. Zeus saw them degenerating, their own ambitions making monsters out of them. He sought to punish these once perfect people to purge this paradise of every cancerous element. Before forcing the flood upon them, he exploited their overwhelming desire to vanquish and dominate every other land by provoking Atlantis to go to war against primeval Athens on the other side of the pillars. They were defeated, for Athens too was the paradigm of virtue and progress, earned, however, and not endowed. Soon after the war, when Zeus realized that its people had reached a point of no return from conceit and disgrace, the loss at war having failed to humble them, this greatest unknown, mankind's favorite mystery, this distant and inscrutable realm, was swallowed up in one day and one night by the sea, and its own earth quaking and flaming. Poseidon's proud dream, a queen's hope and home, and this jewel sunk to the ocean floor, emphatically establishing nature's command when humanity fails at just that. Humanity. Perhaps Atlantis was an allegory, Plato's warning to us humans, who consider ourselves supreme, that nature rules, whether on the outside or within. It always has, and it always will. Civilizations are born, grow, and finally die. In which case, Atlantis is everywhere. Perhaps Atlantis truly existed, and everything a queen gained in love, she lost in war, leaving behind a lesson, legacy, and a jewel of a way of life.